Session number 26579.
Mr. Eddie Clark, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Clark?
I was born in Hamilton, Scotland.
And what was your date of birth?
The 4th of June, 1928.
And could you tell us a bit about your family and, you know, your very early childhood?
Well, my father died when I was very young. He was a disabled miner. And as a consequence, my mother had to go into service, which meant she had to live out from the home. So I was virtually brought up in my young life with my grandmother and my grandfather, who were absolutely excellent parents. I went to...
Did they have enough money? I mean, were they working?
No, we were pretty poverty-stricken, actually. My grandfather also was a disabled miner, but my grandmother, she brought up 12 children amid all the poverty of these days. But
how bad was it for you?
I honestly believe that I was very well protected. It didn't affect me really a great deal. But some of the youngsters whom I went to school with, you could see it had an effect on them. But I was lucky, fortunate, that my grandmother and by this time some of the family had grown up, her family had grown up, and they were contributing quite a bit. So that helped.
Did you see your mum much?
She used to go home about once a week. But she lived within walking distance of where we lived. So I could go a couple of nights a week and see her, because the housekeeper, it was a massive big house, and the housekeeper was very good. She understood our situation.
Now tell me about your education. What were your schools like?
Well, my education was fantastic. I started off going to Cadger St Anne's School, Hamilton, and the teachers were in control. They were very, very strict, but very, very fair. And the education, I felt, when I look back, I felt that it was a great start in life because of the school system then, the discipline. Plus the fact the discipline and the love at home combined to make us very happy children.
Did you have any particular subjects you liked at school, or was it...?
Yeah, English. I was very good at English and history and geography. Arithmetic. In those days, no, it wasn't very good. It helped having 10 fingers and 10 toes. I didn't manage to get past the exams to get to the higher grade school as it was then. But I also then went on to St Mary's Junior Secondary School, which was equally as good. The teachers, once again, in control, strict, but they stood no nonsense. You were there to learn. And then by going there, I started to learn other subjects, science, woodwork, technical drawing, things like that, which helped us youngsters a lot.
What about sport? Was that big for you?
Oh, yes. I played for both school football teams. I finished up being captain of St Mary's football team. The first team.
Football was pretty important.
Oh, yeah, it was very important. That's right. I was football crazy. Still am. But, I used to walk on a Saturday when Hamilton Accies were playing. I'd walk, I think it was about 5 miles there and 5 miles back. Thought nothing of it. I even walked as far as Motherwell when we played Motherwell. And, it was just, I was so fit and we didn't have any money to pay for bus fares. I started a paper round, then I managed to get the bus.
I'll come back. Did you play for any other teams or just your school team? Was there much of a sort? You know that they have football clubs.
That's
locally.
Right. Yeah. Well, I played for an amateur team from Encumbus Lang for about 2 seasons, and then I lost interest for some reason. You know, I think it was the process of growing up. You know, these things happen.
Now, were you in any boys' clubs or, Boy Scouts?
Yeah, I was in the Air Training Corps.
Was that when the war started? Which came to
Now, that would be during the war, about the last 2 years of the war.
Okay, I'll come back to that then.
Yeah.
Now, Tell me about the paper round. How was that organised in those days? Just to give us an idea, because people, whether it's changed or not. Yeah.
Well, it was a very early start in the morning, and I used to work for this woman called Jeannie Robertson. She was quite an eccentric character, her Jeannie. Everything had to be spot on. If she got a complaint about a customer not having a gate closed, she used to haul us over the coals. So what had happened, I'd get down there about 6:30 in the morning, sort out the papers, and then complete my round. Then in the evening, I go down to Hamilton Station and collect the evening papers for the shop. Bring them back. I had a bicycle with a carrier in front. And then when I'd finished delivering the evening papers locally, just quite near the shop, I would then do fruit deliveries. It was also a fruit shop. I'd do fruit deliveries in other parts of the town. And I'd get finished about 7 o'clock.
And how much did you get paid for that, do you remember?
5 shillings.
So not too bad for then.
5 shillings. Yeah, 5 shillings.
Sounds about right.
And I'd give it to my grandmother, and any tips I made maybe about one shilling and sixpence in tips, she let me keep that for spending money, which was a fortune in those days.
Now you were about 11 when the war broke out.
No, was that right, yeah.
Now, what was it like for you, just a kid then, really? Do you remember the day war broke out?
I do indeed. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I can remember the Prime Minister coming on. Neville Chamberlain, and telling us that we were now at war with Germany, the 3rd of September 1939. And it was quite depressing in a way. And then...
Why was that? Well, you see what I mean?
I got an impression, even as a young man of 11, I had a terrible fear of the Germans. We thought there was a massive machine that was going to come and overrun us all, like, no. Then we seemed to get over that initial fear, and then Winston Churchill, he came on the scene and took over as Prime Minister, and I will never ever forget the speeches he gave. You'd be a little low. The speeches used to come on the Sunday night after the 9 o'clock news, and you'd be feeling a bit down. And the time he had finished talking, he wanted to fight the world. It was so inspiring, it was unbelievable.
Even as a young lad?
Even at my age. I'd be about 12 then. And at my age then, I just wanted to go up and fight everybody, you know, because his speeches were so inspirational. And I think then once people realised that he was cometh the hour, cometh the man, I think people realised that we were going to make it. We were going to get through it.
Now, what about the effects of war? I mean, talk about air raid precautions or things. I mean, was Hamilton under threat? What was the situation?
No, what happened, I forget which year it was, maybe about 43, 42 or 43, the German bombers came up the Clyde and they were hitting the ships in the Clyde, the River Clyde, in Glasgow, and Clyde Bank in Glasgow. And one particular raid, Clyde Bank, got really hit very, very hard. So much so that 2 or 3 days later, we had hundreds of evacuees come into Hamilton from Clyde Bank, the surrounding areas, and then the next thing we knew, there was lots of young children coming into our schools from Clyde Bank. And the only thing that landed in Hamilton was a landmine, which landed on a railway line and blew a wagon up through the roof of a block of flats, and that was about 4 miles from where I lived, and that was about the strength of it. Like,
you didn't have an Anderson shelter or anything like that, it just wasn't necessary, or did you?
Yes, we did, actually, yes. And we also had baffle walls.
What are they, sorry?
A baffle wall was, you know, the closest we had. You know, you get into a close, there's about 5 houses. Well, these baffle walls were all a few feet from the entrance, built of brick wall, built of about 5 or 6 feet maybe from the entrance to the close. This was to prevent blast. If bombs landed, then you wouldn't get a direct blast from the bombs. And I nearly got very badly injured one night. There was an air raid come on, and I came running out these walls had just been erected, and I forgot about the walls, and I came running down the stairs, run along the close, and hit this baffle wall. And one of the neighbours found me about 10 minutes later, lying unconscious. I'd absolutely clattered into this wall, and that was the all interest of the war finished for me that night.
What was your Anderson shelter in? I mean, did you ever go in it?
We didn't have any in our building, but some of the other parts of the town did have them.
How did the rationing affect you as a young lad? Rationing, food or clothing or both?
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be brutally frank here. My grandmother had a son called David, who, funnily enough, was badly wounded in the First World War in the Cameroonians. And when he came home, when he was discharged from the army, he eventually became the manager of the cooperative grocery in Burnbank. Needless to say, we didn't have a rationing problem. It wasn't much he gave. Every Friday night, a lorry would come, stop at the house, and this guy would come up with a box of food, give it to my grandmother, and she'd slip him 2 shillings or something for a drink. And that was Uncle David's contribution, which is only natural, looking after his mum, you know? And that helped.
What about
On the whole, I don't think we did too badly, actually. When I think back to my chums in the road, they're all healthy enough. We didn't starve. Clothes, once again, we weren't at the stage then where a lot of youngsters are now, fashion conscious. We had to wear what the family could afford. Full stop. You know? We didn't have a school uniform. I just wore a little short flannels and shirt or a pullover, whatever, or a jacket.
So the rationing didn't really make much difference to you.
None whatsoever.
Now, what about, did you follow, I mean, you got excited by Churchill, did you follow, what was it like for a young man following the progress of the war? How did you follow the progress?
I followed it very closely, actually. No matter what campaign it was, I our only source really was the news on the radio and the papers. And I must confess, I followed it avidly. I was a true Brit, as it were. And I think probably this is what influenced me at the end of the day to join the forces, you know. And I followed it right from Dunkirk right through to the battles in the Middle East.
Did you realise when things were going badly? Were you old enough to realise?
Oh, yeah,
backwards,
you know? Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I think myself, and I say this not in a boastful way, I think I was quite, for my age, I was quite intelligent. And I could absorb everything that was happening. And I could appreciate when things were going wrong and when they were going right.
Now, would your first connection with the forces be the Air Training Corps?
That's right, yeah.
That you mentioned. Yeah. You joined them about 44, 45?
Something like that, round about then, yeah.
So you'd be 16?
Yeah.
Now, tell me about them. Why did you join them and not, say, the...
Army Cadet Force?
Yeah.
Well, I'd always just... notion in the back of my mind, I'd love to fly, you know. And
now, what did that come from?
I think it was Battle of Britain. I think that was inspiration, the initial inspiration, Battle of Britain, and then the bombing campaigns. Because I used to follow that, especially Battle of Britain. I mean, I can still remember my hero, Paddy Finucane, the great Paddy Finucane, who was shot down by one bullet. Fired from a gunner on the deck, you know. Guy Gibson, they were all my heroes, you know. The dam busters and all that, and they inspired me.
And so, you know, the RAF was what was attracting you more than the army at the time.
At that time, yeah.
And how did you go about joining? Where did you go to?
I joined the Hamilton Squadron at Hamilton Academy. And... I became very interested. I became very enthusiastic.
Now, what was the setup of the Hamilton
Academy? It was very good, actually. It was commanded by a squadron leader, a cadet squadron leader, and we had all our instructors were virtually flight lieutenants or pilot officers. I remember what the flight lieutenant used to teach us navigation, and then there was a pilot officer, Clark, his name was Clark, as it happened. He used to teach us aircraft recognition. And then there was another little fellow, Flight Lieutenant Dixon, who was a regular RAF guy, but he was in charge of the sport, and he taught me to box. And from there I took away a boxing career.
Were these instructors, were they good instructors?
Well, they were good. Yeah, they were very good. Well, they were school teachers. They were actually school teachers. They were chaps who were unfit medically to join the Air Force, but they were allowed to join the Air Training Corps and be commissioned. So that the training was very good.
Now, take me through the training. I mean, this would be your first drill, would it? Proper drill.
That's right, yeah.
How did you take to it? I mean, this is RAF drill, of course, but how did you take to drill?
It was very good, actually. We're the next regular company sergeant major, if I remember rightly, who had been in the 1418 war, and he took us for drill, and we just took it like duck to water. Like
you enjoyed it.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah, exactly. I took a great pride in it, and my turnout as well. Like, you know.
Now, did you understand why you had to do so much of it then? I mean, obviously, I know you. Your whole career's in the army, but did you understand right from the start why drill was important?
Oh yeah, it was to instill discipline. That's the basis of discipline.
And you realised that when you were 16?
We were told this, that drill was to instill in us to obey orders immediately. That's what it was all about.
Now, what about your other training? You mentioned, what other training did you get? Did you get any weapons training at all? I mean,
only 2-2, firing the 2-2. That was the only thing. And then, but what we did was we got taken away at weekends, camps.
Tell me about the weekend camps.
And the first camp I went to was a place called Rue, R-H-U-E, in Dumbartonshire. It was a coastal command thing. And my first flight then was in a Catalina flying boat. Took me up in a Catalina. And then the second time I went there, I had a flight in a Sunderland flying boat.
And what was it like the first time up? Flying was not common then, was it? I mean, it's not like today.
It was very, very rare. In fact, it was only a few of us were selected to go flying. And I remember that my first experience was in this flying Catalina flying boat was sat up in front. I just forget the pilot's name now. I've remembered it for years. But anyway, I was sat up front with him. And I remember when we climbed out and then we levelled off, we were heading for this cloud strata. And just before we went into it, I flung my hands up. I got such a fright, I thought we were flying into a wall. But once we got through it, that was all right. And that was me hooked then. Like, you know, I wanted to fly. However...
Now, hang on. What else would you do at the weekend camps? Well, you know, the airfield.
Yeah, it was just mainly getting shown around the airfield, like, you know. And then and then finally before I left, I went on a two-week camp up to just outside Dundee. RAF Teeling, T-E-A-L-I-N-G. Went to RAF Teeling and spent 2 weeks up there. Now, this was an operational conversion unit. It was young pilots who had just passed out as pilots and they were now sent to Teeling to get their training as Spitfire and Hurricane pilots. And I got a flight there in an old Rapide. That was the only flight I got there. But it was interesting talking to all these young men. We were allowed to talk to them. And funny enough, my uncle, my grandmother's youngest son, he was stationed there. He was a flight sergeant there. My uncle Joe, because he lived in Dundee. And we spent a wonderful 2 weeks there. We went through every aspect of the training that these chaps were getting, like, you know. And we were allowed to sit in the aircraft, crawl all over the aircraft, like, you know. And it was a marvellous 2 weeks.
It attracted you. You liked the idea.
Very much so, but there's a sequel here.
No, I'll speak more about the training. Now, what other training would you do back at the Hamilton Academy? You mentioned air recognition. What was that? How did you do it? There's lots of different ways of doing it.
What in actual happened was that there was charts up on the wall and models of German and British aircraft. And the officer, pilot officer Clark, he would teach us the various outlines of the aircraft, the characteristics of the aircraft, and then we would be given tests. You know, you'd be taken into that room, and a slide would be on the projector. What aircraft's that? And you'd be 4 seconds to recognise the aircraft. It was good fun, actually, you know. And
any other training you did, you know, I presume you had not a drill night, but a cadet night or corps night. What not? You know, what else would you do at the Hamilton Academy?
Well, it was just navigation, drill, aircraft recognition.
How much navigation did you? Because that's quite.
It was about how to fly from point A to point B.
Now, how did you do it? That because maths wasn't your strong.
It was done by compass work. You know, compasses, and. And funny enough, I wasn't very good at it to start with. I wasn't very good at it because it involved mathematics. But that was about the strength of it. We were just taught how to navigate an aircraft. We're taught about the stars and what have you, how to recognise the various patterns in the sky and what have you. And apart from that, that was about it. And apart from the boxing, I used to go boxing training.
Now tell me about boxing, because that seems to have attracted you right from the start.
Yeah. Well, I fought one or two fights for my squadron, and then I eventually got into the finals of the Scottish ATC Championships.
ATC, Air Training.
Air Training Corps Championships. And I was beaten in the final in points and I mean this sincerely. The guy that I beat, he hardly laid a glove on me for the three rounds. And Flight Lieutenant Dixon, who was in my corner, he was really great, the way he looked after me in the corner. And when the result was announced that this other chap had won, it was his father was a wing commander sitting at the ringside. His father was a regular RAF officer. And I thought that night Flight Lieutenant Dixon was going to get court-martialed. He went absolutely berserk. You know, he went over to this guy and said, "Your son never laid a glove on my cadet." He said, "Why? Why?" And it was a bit of a banter. But I would off into the dressing room and cried my eyes out, you know, because I knew I'd won, right, you know. And that was it. I never fought again after that until I joined the army. I made it clear getting near the end of my time, and I knew I wanted to join the forces. And I went and I spoke to the CO of the squadron. So he said, "Hang on," and he looked through my records. He said, "You've been very good in your aircraft recognition and your drill, but," he said, "I'm afraid your navigation's letting you down." He said, with the introduction of the jet aircraft, he said, "You'll find," he said, "that the standards of the RAF are demanding are very high." And he said, "Quite frankly, I don't think you'll make it." And he said, "I'm going to be brutally frank with you." And I came out that night very disappointed and packed in. I thought, well, that's it.
So, now, whereabouts, that was before the end of the war, or just after?
Just after the war.
Right. Now, tell me about the end of the war, the V-Day, VJ-Day. Yeah, were there any celebrations,
Oh, there was people all over the place were celebrating. You know, it was they're just taking to the streets, and there was parties, street parties. What happened was there was a lot of organisations within the towns. It was known as the street funds, and there were all sorts of ways of raising money for the guys coming home, sending parcels and that to them. And when the war finished, a lot of these people discovered they had quite a bit of money left. So what they did was, they had big street parties. The whole street, with the tables lined along the street. And I know in my back garden, they had a big party in my grandmother's back garden.
Now, what do you remember of that? Because people don't know what those... They don't have street parties these days very much.
No.
What was a street party like, the V-Day, say?
Or oh, they're fantastic. Everybody had... Us kids had hats, funny hats on, and these tables would be creaking with food and drink. You know, where they dug them up, I don't know, but, I mean, lots of enterprising people organised these things, like, you know. And then they would have backdoor concerts as well to raise funds. That was another thing.
Backdoor concerts?
Backdoor concerts. Yeah. Kiddies it was all the children that organised it. They'd make little stages and they invite people along to, say, maybe a half an hour or hour concert. And all the kids would go up and be doing turns, singing and dancing. And the money from that raised helped towards sending parcels to the troops. So, as I say, when the war finished, all that money went into one ginormous street party. And we all loved it, like, you know.
Now, were you still at school, and you'd be 16? When did you leave school?
Well, I left school when I was 14, actually.
So that would be, like, going back again a bit, it doesn't matter much, 1942.
Yeah.
Now, what did you do when you left school?
Now, when I left school, my grandmother insisted that I become a carpenter and joiner. And I said, no, I don't want to become a carpenter and joiner. I said, I just want to do anything till I become aged to join. But this time I was starting to lean towards the army then, like, you know. I said, I want to join the army. And oh, there was hell on. But they insisted that I'd go and do the carpentry and joinery.
As an apprentice or as a...
As an apprentice. I was totally useless. And I said to my grandmother, I said, look, go down to the school, St. Mary's. Get a hold of Mr. Kelly, the woodwork teacher, and he'll tell you whether I'm fit to become a carpenter and joiner. Because he used to fling all my work into the bin, the waste bin, when he inspected it. So, really, the civilian part of my life was very, very uninteresting, you know.
And so you were doing this apprenticeship, and you were rubbish at it?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
How many years did you do it for?
A couple of years. Well, about 3 years. I still wasn't... And then what happened was... My job was in jeopardy because all the guys were coming back from the war. A lot of the company that I'd with, the guys were coming back from the war, like, you know.
So you did it from 42 to 45?
Yeah,
each.
Yeah.
So what happened when they came back? You were saying all the soldiers were coming back. Sorry.
Yeah, well, they were coming back. These were chaps who had been apprentices who had maybe 3 or 4 years in and they were called up or volunteered for the forces. They're all coming back now. So I opted out and I thought, right, there's no hardship. And in actual fact, I went behind my grandmother's back, joined the army.
Now tell me how you volunteered. You didn't wait to be called up then, did you?
No, I volunteered, yeah.
Now tell me how you volunteered.
I went down to, let me see now, in Glasgow. There's a recruiting station down in...
Doesn't matter, won't
you? Forget the name of the road.
It'll come back to you.
Anyway, went down to the recruiting office in Glasgow. And when we were sitting outside in the waiting room, ready to go in for the initial interview, a chap came out and he said, any lads, he said, if you're carpenters or bricklayers, don't tell them that if you want to get in the army, he said. And I thought, crikey, what do I do? Because they were discouraging young men from joining the forces because they wanted to be trained as apprentices for the rebuilding of the country. So when I went in, I said, oh, I'm a labourer. I was thinking on my feet, more or less. And it was this little civilian guy, like, you know. And he said, you're a labourer. I said, yeah. So I told him where I worked and that, like, you know. And he said, okay, fair enough. It all went from there.
Do you know the date? It was 46, was it?
No, it'd be 40, till end of 45.
Decemberish?
No, I'd say November, October or November.
Okay. And were there any tests or anything you had to do?
Yeah, it was just basic tests, arithmetic, English, and what have you, like, you know. Very, 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 very basic.
Physical?
Yeah, get a medical. Well, once this chap was finished with us, went through into another room, had a medical. A medical in those days was just as long as you were breathing, you were in, kind of thing. I mean, they didn't have the facilities they've got today, like, you know.